Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
I'm Mark Zander. Here's Brian Hanley, and we're taking your phone calls here on ESPN 1000, 312-332-3776. All right, Brian, starting lineup for your Chicago White Sox. Tim Anderson at short. When's the hearing, by the way? Do we know? Did they say when the hearing is?
No.
Probably not. Tomorrow, Tuesday, maybe. But he's playing until he's appealing his three-game suspension. Is there a solid chance that he'll get knocked down to maybe one or two?
I would say.
Doesn't that usually happen?
I would say probably knock a game off.
Yeah. Tim Anderson at short, batting first. Andrew Vaughn, first base, batting second. A.J. Pollock in center field. A lot of people seem to be freaked out about him playing the field. He's a Gold Glove winner. Golden Gloves. It's more like boxing. But, yeah, you get what I'm saying. Yeah. So he's in center field, and Jose Abreu's batting cleanup, DH. Gavin Sheets, right field, hero of yesterday's game, batting sixth. Eloy Jimenez in left field, batting seventh. Or, no, I'm losing track here. One, two, three, four, five, six. Yeah, batting sixth. Josh Harrison, second base, seventh. Larry Garcia, third base, batting eighth. I guess Yoan needs a day off then. And
really?
Sebi Zavala, I say no.
Yeah.
Sebi Zavala catching, and Dylan Cease is your starting pitcher. That's good.
They work together, those two.
Yeah, no, they do. They do. That's fine. I'm still troubled by why isn't Yoan in. How does Yoan try to earn that money that he's being paid on the bench?
All hands on deck.
All hands on deck. And that is not calling for the hands of Leury Garcia.
No, in my opinion. Certain hands, maybe.
Jumping in here is Owen in Willowbrook. We hear from Owen a lot here. Thanks for calling, Owen. You're on ESPN 1000.
Hi, guys. I'm really glad you mentioned Dick Allen, because you're right. He should be in the Hall of Fame. And I'll tell you, I'm 65, and I've been to probably a lot of games. And I've probably been to where they've hit balls over the old White Sox Park roof, but the hardest ball I ever saw hit was Dick Allen's home run in the center field bleachers, the old park.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable.
Was that the one that Harry tried to catch with the net?
Yes, he was. He was announcing it out. I was out in center field that
day.
He was announcing center field bleachers.
He would do that.
I think when Harry started with the showers.
I remember that. Yeah.
And I will say, the guy in 72 that played center field, though, for the Sox was Buddy Bradford.
Buddy Bradford, okay.
And if it wasn't for those damn Oakland A's, the 72 team might have done something. I can't remember if it was the 72 or 71 team.
No, it was 72. It was Richie's. That was a spectacular year. And, again, that book, Chili Dog MVP, kind of outlines that whole thing, which is really cool. Owen, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
So, throwing out there Richie Allen. There's still a lot of people like Owen there that believe he should be in the Hall of Fame. I guess he wasn't really friendly sometimes with the writers. How does that work? Real quick, Brian, how does that dynamic work, you know, from your perspective being a writer? Yeah, you know, is that really fair if that is the case, that he hasn't been in the Hall of Fame because there are some grudges?
Well, first of all, I mean, those writers, sadly, most of them aren't around anymore.
Right, okay.
So the newer age.
So they don't know
writers,
him. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't know him. I mean, guys like, you know, Paul Sullivan, he was going to games as a fan back then, mm-hmm. right? Who Paul, you know, the great Tribune columnist, and was also the head of the Chicago chapter of the Baseball Writers Association for a long time here. I was a member when I was covering baseball. I believe you had to cover baseball for 10 years to have a Hall of Fame vote.
Right. But you do agree with me that some of those old timers that are probably gone now had some kind of grudge.
Yes, there was definitely that. And there were also guys who were chummy with players and would give them votes even if they weren't even borderline candidates, just because some guys had clauses in their contract that they got. It'd be more like MVP votes. Right. So if they had a clause in their contract that gave them bonus money, if they finished in the top 10 in MVP voting, you know, some writers were known to just cast a ballot for them because they liked the guy. So it worked both ways. But the Minnie Minoso Hall of Fame induction last
last week and last night they honored the family right. before the game.
But that took another special committee, not even the Veterans Committee, right? That they had to go back to the a committee that considered baseball players in the Negro Leagues and, you know, kind of innovators and
right.
So it, I don't know what committee would have to take Richie Dick Allen's case into account at this point, because I mean that's where to be at. That's how
right,
we get in.
Right, yeah. And it's ridiculous. Minoso did not get in for this long, and it right. took like a concentrated, you know, movement to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at his stats, I remember watching him play when I was a kid because he came back in the 70s.
Yeah,
I was fortunate. Five different decades, right?
I was fortunate enough to have a meal or two with him when I was covering the White Sox, because he would be around the ballpark and be up in the press box.
He was the ambassador all the time. Yeah, and I met him as a kid, too. He was ever present.
Yeah, and he was just a wonderful man. I mean, just a genuine, gentle man. I mean, he was a great guy.
Mike in Elmhurst wants to jump in. He's got a story kind of like mine regarding the old stadium. Hey, Mike, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, guys. Thanks. I love the show. Now, you brought back a great memory of taking beers into various venues.
right? What was your trick?
So we used to do that at Soldier Field, and it wound up getting the anti-fans wind up catching us. So here's what I did. I would take my jacket, and I did this on the fly. I had a roll of electrical tape in my truck. So I taped around the end of the sleeves. I filled each sleeve and got like maybe four beers in each sleeve.
Sure.
And I walked up to the anti-friend carrying my jacket, and they wanted to frisk you.
Yeah.
So I held out my arms to the sides with my jacket hanging down.
And they didn't say anything about what's wrong with the arms and the jacket. They're just totally like somebody's, what is in there? Well, they're just sticking straight.
He never looked at the jacket. He frisked me and said, go. And I just walked in.
Brilliant.
And, was that good or not?
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. That's eight
genius
beers
level.
You didn't have to pay. That is genius level. You get a gold star.
I always thought that was pretty smart to get it past them, but hide in plain sight. That was my motto.
That's it. They never frisked me. I just put my arms to my side and got three cans in. You know, just make sure you had the jacket with the big arms.
You could do that in the old days, and then they started getting a little more thorough. But
right.
You know, you got to adjust with the times. But I thank you for bringing back a great memory. That was fun memory of my childhood.
Right on, Mike. Well, hopefully you weren't too young.
Well, Jay Cantu, our great young producer, was just asking during the break, you know, didn't they have metal detectors back at those stadiums?
Oh, Jake, you're so freaking young.
I mean, and
it's like a wand, right?
They didn't even invent that yet. That's how long ago we're talking.
And these Andy Frame guys were like, they all weighed about 80 pounds.
Everybody was named Andy Frame, which is really weird.
No, but they had the perfectly pressed pants
and the nice
pants.
Hat, the conductor hat or whatever that is.
A police hat almost, right?
Kind of like a Metro, what they wear on Metro.
Yeah, and the chief was a white hat, right?
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
The supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
But these, you know, these kids in their little blue pressed pants and their dress shirts, and at Wrigley, they would have two of them upstairs when the upper deck was always closed because they didn't sell that many tickets for all those bad teams in the 70s. And there are two or three guys up there assigned just to go get foul balls that went up there and bring them back to the clubhouse.
And honestly, they all had to answer to the name Andy because that's what people said. Hey, Andy Frame. Andy. Yeah. Which Andy are you talking to? Yeah. There's like 500 Andys here.
That was the guy, I assume that was the guy who started the company, right?
Yes.
Andy
Frame. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know when they went away, but one day at a game years ago, I looked around and said, what happened to the Andy Frame? Ushers. Right. They just stopped showing up, and now they're
The dry cleaning bill got to them for all the
uniforms.
That must
have been it. Yeah, those uniforms must have cost a lot of money. All right, back to the phones we go. 312-332-3776. Donnie has a story about the great Minnie Minoso, number 9 on the south side. Hey, Donnie, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, I'm a little bit older than you guys, but just for the spirit that Minnie Minoso had, I'm Channel 9, 100 years ago when I was after school watching the game. He walked, he walked to first base, right? He stole second, he stole third, and he was out trying to steal home. But I love the spirit that guy had. True story.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Donnie. You know, he was, He was amazing. I don't even have his stats in front of me, but he had, like, in the Professional Baseball League, over 4,000 hits.
Yeah.
Something like that. And who knows stolen bases? Who knows what that – I mean, he was a base stealer. Who knows what – I mean, if that was, you know, more than Ricky Henderson stole with, you know, all the years in the different leagues. Of course, that doesn't count in just Major League. But he was pretty incredible.
Sully wrote a great column earlier in the week about Minnie's career and, you know, recounted he hit in, what, five decades? And they were going to try to get him one more at bat. And
they got him in. They squeezed him in the 80s, right? Didn't he?
Yeah. Early 80s? But then Blackjack McDowell and that group thought the whole thing was a joke. And they had a like a player rebellion when they heard that they were going to try to put him on the roster and get him in at bat in a regular season game. And they said absolutely not. And Jerry had to break the news to Minnie that that wasn't going to happen. So
I don't remember that story. Jack was a bit of a pain in the ass sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I covered him. He was like serious as a heart attack, and he went on to a music career.
I know, I remember that.
Yeah, I remember. I had a CD of his back in the day. But
oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, well, he gave it to me. It was free.
Okay.
I didn't buy it.
Good.
I was a sports writer, like you said. You got concert tickets. I got a lot of swag. So he used to sit in his arbitration hearings, right? Mm-hmm. And his agent would tell him, "Don't do it," because once you get in there, the club basically tells you you're a piece of you know what, and we're not paying you because here's all the things you don't do. And it creates a what you call a bad relationship moving forward.
And that's why you have an agent to stay away from this.
Exactly right. But he insisted on sitting in on those and seeing if they were going to say it to him while he's at the table.
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of guy he was. So.
Yeah, he enjoyed the conflict. All right. We've got a couple more to get to here. Paulie on in Mount Prospect this afternoon on ESPN 1000. Actually, yeah, it's not afternoon yet. Do I got Paulie? Hey, Paulie, you there?
Paulie, I guess.
Yeah, I guess not. All right, let's move on. Let's try Paul Valpo. Paul wants to talk about the Cubs here on ESPN 1000. What's up, Paul?
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Hey.
Yeah, a quick point on the Cubs. I mean, I know, you know, there's been so much made in fanfare and teary goodbyes with Contreras and Happ. They're both good Cub players, but and obviously mm-hmm. you got the older relievers that will have a little bit of value on the market. But I can't wait for this trade deadline to see who the Cubs end up in return with as far as prospects. Because you look at a couple of different things, like I said, there's so much been made that they don't want to spend the money on Contreras and Happ, but I mean I think they started to develop some players. They signed Suzuki, you got Morel, you got Horner who's developed. This is gonna give Velasquez an opportunity to develop there. He's 23 years old with Happ being gone. So, you know, the starters, you know, you got Steele and Thompson, you know, there's three, four or fives at the very least. You know, I understand they're a little bit up there in age, but a lot of times when we look at age, we call Gavin Sheets a young player, and he's 26 going on 27. Yeah. Those guys are in the same – they're in the same boat. So I think we kind of nitpick who we think is young sometimes if mm-hmm. we want to kind of put it to our narrative, just like I've heard Brian say a million times about Caleb Killian. Well, you know, he's 25. But, that I mean, Jacob deGrom didn't come up till he was 26. So I'm not saying he's him, but you know, when we look at age – I think they have a lot of good things in the prospect pipeline. But here's the thing is, if they don't have these prospects for Contreras and Happ, there's no way they can trade for a guy that they may need to get. There's no arms on the free agent market. You know, they're going to have some back-end guys. Stroman's still around. Hendricks is still around. They need a number one or a number two starter. They're going to have to trade for that because Joe Musgrove just was extended by the Padres. There's no number one starters out there. They're going to have to trade for somebody.
Now, do you think Stroman's going to make it past the trade deadline?
I think he will because I think he's got a couple more years. I mean, I don't – unless they can get something for him. I mean, and that wouldn't be the end of the world either. Other thing is they've started to do is they've proven with Carter Hawkins and with Craig Breslow and this pitching lab that they can develop pitchers. They got this Brandon Hughes who never pitched before. He's a lefty or should say never pitched before. They got some bullpen arms that they're going to be able to develop. So if they get rid of these older bullpen guys that are there. So I guess it's not as doom and gloom, and I don't think it's going to be as long as guys like Brian want to believe just because – the Ricketts are cheap and they're not going to spend. They're going to spend, and they're developing players a lot better than they were.
You
and
know,
they've
Paul,
got some pieces.
Yeah, you know, yesterday we were talking about Gordon Whitmire wrote a column for NBC Sports Chicago, and I know you know Gordon because he's been covering the team forever. And he had an interesting take that what if you go out and once Carlos Rodon opts out of his contract with the Giants after the season, you go out and add him to the staff. And I'm with you. If Stroman's not traded by Tuesday, you got Keegan Thompson, you got Steele. I don't know, Kyle Hendricks still has left in the tank. But if you go out and get a guy like that and sign him to a long-term contract and spend some money on him, now how much have you accelerated the rebuild? Instead of, you know, thinking about getting rid of Stroman by Tuesday, are you in the market for an arm like that that immediately starts saying, okay, now we're serious about building this thing up quicker than sooner than later?
Yeah, and I think that's Rodon would be the one if he opts out. I mean, and obviously
he will opt
history
out.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's an injury history there, and I know that might be a little iffy, but it couldn't hurt because they're going to have the money. Yeah, so yeah, I think that there's going to be, like you said, I think they're going to speed up this process a lot quicker, and they're starting to find guys you never would have, you know, anticipated. Morel, Suzuki's got the contract. He obviously, after this adjustment era, I think is going to be pretty good. He's the type of bat. Horner's development. So like I said, that's where I think everyone's crying about Hap, but I think getting this chance for Velasquez to Hap, they're selling high on, you know. I mean,
that doesn't mean
he's an all-star. I get it, but I mean, you probably can extend him at 5 years and $100 million, you know. So it's not like I don't think they're not extend or they're not.
Hey, I would not want to pay him. I would not extend Hap. You're right. Sell high. He's had, God bless him, he had an all-star year.
This is the year
he needed to have that and be better defensively and settle at left field and have the, you know, be better switch hitting and everything.
Thanks for the call, Paul.
Yeah, there have been too many year and a half months where you're like, I don't see this guy as a cornerstone.
No, you're right. Yeah, you've got to know when to get out on a high point, and now is the time. But you guys bring up an interesting point about going after Rodon. We've got Paulie, who has rejoined us. He is on hold. We will get to him and your calls at 312-332-3776 after this on ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter. At ESPN 1000.
Xander and Hanley on ESPN 1000. You can catch us on the ESPN Chicago app. Of course, listen live there or listen to the podcast after the show. Catch all the podcasts. There's a million podcasts on there. Take up all day to listen to all that great content. 100.3 HD2. As well as ESPN 1000 on the AM dial. All right, so we've got a phone call to take here. Paulie is in Mount Prospect. I believe he's here. Paulie, testing. Are you there? Paulie?
I'm here. You guys hear me?
Okay. All right. Yeah, we got you. You're on ESPN 1000.
Yeah, sorry. I got dropped before. And I just want to lead off by saying, I think you were based on what I called before. You had said something about being sold a bill of goods. And my thought was just, yeah, this team just fools gold. Because, and I don't want to pick on Luis Robert. I want to qualify that, too. I want to say I hope he is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I was saying, even before his recent problems, though, like just between Robert, Eloy, and Moncada, those three guys, I just don't trust them to stay healthy. They just seem like a pulled hamstring or pulled something every time they step on the field. Because they always just, you know, especially like Eloy, he's such an awkward fielder. I mean, if I'm Rick Hahn, I don't know how, I don't know what lens he's looking at this team through, because I really feel like between Moncada and Eloy, you're really looking at like, you know, 2019 and 2020. And with Robert, you're saying, okay, well, in this, you know, 60 game span, he was this. And, you know, before the season, people were saying, oh, he's an MVP candidate. And I don't know what, I'm a fan too. I don't know what people are looking at though, because I'm just like, I need to see it for, like, give me at least 140 games.
Well, and absolutely, yes. Agreed. Any one of those. I mean, you've all had stops and starts, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I was just going to say on the injury point, too, and that's the thing. Like, those three are so injury prone. Then you've also got, like, Grandal, who's another guy where he's 33. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we're counting on him to, you know, relive his all-star years or what. And I know he had a decent, you know, as far as statistically, last year he didn't do poorly, but he was also hurt a good chunk of the year. And then you've also got like a Tim Anderson, where even at 29, he's always seems to be like, you know, one, you know, hustle play away from being on the IL.
So yeah, it's been a tough year. You're right. Everybody is just one hustle play away from spending time on the IL. That's
so
a great
Paulie,
way to put
if
it.
If I'm hearing you right, you don't think Rick Hahn should be aggressive by the deadline on Tuesday because this team is got a lot of holes that you just went through. And so if you're the GM, you really can't be saying, okay, got to make three moves here because we got to get back in this thing. is you don't think they're good enough to win something.
No, my thing is, like, the only trading pieces that I see are, like, Vaughn and Sheets, and maybe, you know, if you wanted to give up some, you know, I don't know what the prospects are like in the minor leagues, but from what I'm understanding, they don't have one of the better farm systems either. So I don't think you blow up the team. I think you're still in a spot where you can, you know, as far as, that's the thing too, like, as far as being a Sox fan, you don't make the playoffs often. So I think when you're there, you have to try to do it. So
right.
I think you know, as far as being aggressive, I don't know. I mean, what would you guys, I would love to know, like, what you guys would think as far as just even what potential trades would be, because I've heard people talking about Soto, and I just don't even know.
That's pipe dream stuff.
Yeah,
and then we would probably lose him in 2 years to free agency anyway, right? That's the only thing.
So let's if it were possible, say we had the assets to give up, and we really felt we were close, and it would really be a difference maker. We could be that team for 2 years, let them walk, and then, or trade them before, and get some assets back. So that's not a bad idea. It's just that we don't have what other teams that can offer. Like, the Padres have a ridiculous amount of assets that apparently they may be the front runners right now, according to what I'm reading.
It sure looks like that way, and because they have decided a couple of years ago they're going to do whatever it takes to be the Dodgers of Southern California.
Right.
And
wait, are the Dodgers of Southern? Oh, you mean even more Southern California?
Yeah, but it is interesting because, you know, Wilson Contreras, supposedly the rumors are San Diego bound, but they're keeping their powder dry to see what the Soto sweepstakes looks like, right? So can they pull off both? If we saw what Cincinnati got for Castillo, and top five prospects or five prospects, including the top three from Seattle, you know, Soto is going to be a lot more than that.
Yep.
And the Cubs and Sox are not Matt Derby. It's the usual suspects, right? I mean, it's the Dodgers, the Padres, the Yankees. And I think Wilson Contreras probably end up, my guess, if they pull off the Soto deal down in San Diego, I guess Wilson Contreras ends up in Tampa. So that would be my guess.
Thanks for the call, Paulie. You know, the whole idea of making a big trade on the South side, as much as we would like to see that, what's the one big trade we could make that would actually make a difference and push us, let's face it, push us to the World Series? I don't think there is one.
No.
We've got multiple issues. And if Rick notices that, which I'm sure he does, you know, it's like, okay, what's the most glaring issue that is player involved? Because you can argue that there's some coaching issues, it seems, from our aspect. There are some discipline issues with the players. What's the one player on the market right now that we can get that's not going to cost too much that will make enough of a difference to help us in the playoffs? That's what they have to look at. And there are several needs, right? Left-handed bat, we talked about that. But then how about a right-handed bat that can hit right-handed pitching? Yep. I mean, Pollock was supposed to be that guy. He hasn't really not been, but he hasn't lit the world on fire like we were hoping. And like a guy like Gavin Sheets, he has not hit left-handed pitching at all.
Right.
So, you know what, a left-handed bat, I mean, okay, a left-handed power bat, that's great. I just want a power bat that can hit lefty or righties.
Well, and, you know, I give you Ian Happ. He's not going to, you know, set the world on fire, but these are the moves that Rick Hahn's going to make. It won't be the blockbuster move.
No, that's the point, right?
He's just going to fill as many holes as he can, and I don't know if that's multiple players in one deal or, you know, a three-way trade or three different trades. And one of our Twitter polls is, how aggressive is he going to be? How many moves is he going to make? 0, 1, 2, or 3 or more?
And we will wrap that up by 12:30 when we're getting out of here. Yeah.
But he has needs for sure. But can he fill all the needs?
No, there's too many. There's too many. And we started off the season thinking maybe there were just a few.
I mean, they're really in no man's land right now.
Yep.
I mean, you don't know which. You go one direction, but it's going to push you. It's going to cost you. And how long is that going to last you?
What if someone calls you and makes you an offer you didn't see coming for Johnny Cueto? I mean, you know, again, you have to think about the future.
You have to sell high. You have to sell high. And, right. And Cueto, you imagine, I mean, thinking about how he's done for us.
Yeah.
Nobody else wanted him. We had him on a minor league prove-it deal.
Yep. And now he's proved it.
A brilliant move from Rick Hahn.
Right. I mean, but, you know, the message it would send to Sox fans is we're not winning anything this year.
Right.
But, you know, for a guy who's 37 and having a hell of a season and he's
cheap. If you get something for him, yep. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, and those are the tough decisions that aren't going to play well with the paying fan base. But in your heart of hearts, it might be the smart move to make as a GM.
And it's tough because we were sold the World Series or bust thing this year.
It's been more bust than anything else.
Yes, it has been.
Well, it's been mediocre is what it's been.
312-332-3776. We're going to talk Bears when we come back here on ESPN 1000. We've got some audio to play for you and a lot of things to look forward to, maybe. I don't know.
I want to ask you, Mark. Yeah. You run stations, right? And you've run the staffs and managed staffs. We heard a lot of players singing the praises of the coaching staff, the new and...
We have all that audio.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but I want to ask you how you got through, even though it's not sports, it's an industry, but, you know, how you got through
to the team. Well, it's an industry with egos, just like sports,
yeah,
I can tell you
how
that.
You got through, how did you get through to the team? What was your approach? Was it evolving, ever-evolving? There's interesting audio, like you said, from some of the coaches, how they've evolved and changed in their approach to how they coach guys up. And I'd like to, as an administrator, hear, you know, how you did it and right. to what degree of success.
Yeah, we'll jump into that after this on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Facebook at ESPN Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Always a good day we can sneak some Rush into the playlist here on ESPN 1000. Xander and Hanley, we're here until 12:30. Then we get White Sox pregame and the White Sox taking on the A's for the last game in the set. Dylan Cease on the bump this afternoon on your home for the White Sox, ESPN 1000. All right, Brian, so talking about the Bears, we've got a lot of audio about players kind of singing the praises of the new coaching staff, right?
Yeah, everyone, first of all, when you have a young team and a rebuilding team, and, you know, it's much easier to manage, right? I mean, they better be open to whatever suggestions, however you're going to deliver them. Whether you're the hardcore, you know, kick them in the butt coach or the, you know, touchy-feely, let's all do this kumbaya coach. But it's good to hear that they, you know, what, 3 days, 4 days into camp so far, the culture that Ted Phillips and George and Nagy and all those people talked about does seem real now. It does seem like there is a positive vibe about how – doesn't make them any better right now, right? I mean, the Brad Biggs,
you have to start somewhere, and if people are feeling pretty good behind the scenes, that's a good solid footing.
Yeah, the young guys are malleable and they like they think they're being coached up and being coached up in the right way. And you know, Cody Whitehair is now a grizzled veteran relative to the rest of the group, and he talked about, you know, how it's he didn't say it's different, he just said he likes what he's heard and seen of these coaches.
I'm trying to get my mouse. We're going to hear from...
I got it.
Oh, you got it?
Okay. Our staff that we have here, a lot of them, they're really good teachers. You know, they break things down. We even play cahoots just to, like, see who gets things the fastest and understands, you know, make things fun, make it a competition. But the way they teach us and the way they break things down and go through stuff and draw things up, you know, it's next level. So, you know, I love the staff and how they teach us and how they bring these concepts in and show us how it's done.
Coach Morgan's been great. You know, the way he carries himself, the way he teaches, he's very detailed. You know, I like what he brings to the table. He's very compassionate about, you know, making us as good as we can be. And that's all you can ask for in a coach, right? It's just trying to get the best out of you every single day. And he's going to continue to push you every single day so that you're never hitting a limit, you know. And he's done a great job with that.
Yeah, you have to like that, right?
Well, and you heard Herbert talk about Kahoot. And
we play that here at ESPN. We used to on our Zoom phone calls during COVID. We played Kahoot.
I was curious if y'all knew what Kahoot was.
Yeah, we did it here.
And you can explain it to him because Josh Schrock wrote about it, our buddy at NBC Sports Chicago. But It's a quiz app, right?
It's so a quiz app online for like Zoom meetings and such, where everybody can join on their phone. So it's a team building exercise, right. What it is, where you have the questions that come up on the Zoom phone call, and everybody's got their phone and they're answering, and then you know the percentages are calculated. You know if you were right with the answer or whatever. Yeah, we've done that here.
Get in, It's like,
am I missing anything, Jake?
No, but I like the aspect that he's talking about that because, again, that resonates with, like, my generation.
And these are young kids.
These are young kids. Right. Like, I grew up, I remember in 7th, 8th grade playing Kahoot, right? And that's how they would get us to learn in science and math. So I like that he's talking about that, and you move that over to the football operations.
Yeah, they can use multiple choice, true, false, short answer questions. They get points, and the leaderboard pops up, like you said, after, you know, a round.
Mm-hmm.
So it reinforces... It makes them want to be, it's a competition, right? So you want to be the best one on winning the Kahoot game, but and then they build upon that and take it out to the field. So that's pretty cool.
Now they win. I would win Jolly Ranchers if I won, but they get a couple $1 million if they win.
I don't know if they're handing out cash for Kahoots at the team meetings. Maybe somebody has to buy a meal for everybody or something like that.
Or
Jolly Ranchers.
Or side bets,
bets, those competitive types, pro athletes, they're making bets on top of bets on top of bets.
Baseball teams, when they were covering on the road, you be on the charter, you go down to the luggage carousel.
Now, we're not talking about Pete Rose, are we?
No, but luggage carousel, they would vote they would bet on whose luggage would
come
out
first. That's almost, that gets to be tiring. Like, everything is up for bet.
Well, the smart guys would watch them load the luggage on the plane and see the first one on would be the last one off.
Right.
So they would make mental notes about whose bags were coming out first.
Again, tiring.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm on the plane, I just want to rest.
There's a couple $100 going when you landed. There's people being paid off for who paid attention.
312-332-3776. They're saying all the right things, and we've got some other audio here too on what's the next one we should play, Jake? Is it Montgomery's?
No, let's do the Allen stuff first.
Okay, I'll let you press that button.
This is Allen on his defensive mindset. We've heard about the hits from Eberflus, and he was kind of praising that in their meetings that they've been having with players.
The hits principle. I'll refer to that often, but that's the first thing that shows up in our meeting, that we want to lead the world in hustle. Intensity, the pads will come on, and you saw the guys get a little chippy today. That's the heat. They're tired. It's day four. But we want to be an intense defense. We want to hustle. We want to take the ball away. That's a big deal. We preach that. We practice that. We talk about it. We emphasize it. And ultimately, we also want to be smart football players. Some people will ask, hey, are you going to be hustle or are you going to be smart? And we say both and. We're going to do both. So that would be what I would say our signature, our stamp is the hits principle.
Yeah, that hits thing, when we first heard about that, a lot of companies, right? They have the buzzwords, the acronyms. It's like, what's it stand for? And sometimes they equal words. I worked at a company and I don't even remember the acronym, but it didn't equal a word. So people would go around trying to make a word out of this acronym. And it's like, that's not a word. Can we try to figure something out that makes sense? But in a football sense, hits, I can remember that. I don't care how many hits I've taken. I can still remember that principle.
So when you were managing staffs, and I've never done that, no one's ever given me that kind of responsibility, that would be
well, believe me, there are a few that maybe regret that they gave me that responsibility, but go ahead.
Yeah, did you do the team building where you took them out, for a weekend and people,
lean backwards? There's no budget for that silliness. Yeah. Oh, okay. Have we gone out to a bar, bought everybody a beer, kind of went over the radio station? Objective of what we're trying to do and team build in that way and that type of thing. Sure. Having programmed, I've spent my career in rock radio, and there's a certain vibe to a rock radio station that I grew up enjoying. And that's the kind of vibe that we always had. And it's about, it's about community, just like it is here, right? The sports gathers everybody here to ESPN 1000. you know, rock bands that we'd play on the various stations and the concerts and the events we were through. It would be the glue that held everything together. So I would just, you know, just kind of approach. And I worked for some very hardcore program directors that mm-hmm. you would just kind of like, you get called in for an air check. And you felt like air check is when they sit and listen to your show in front of you.
And they pick it apart.
And they pick it apart. And it's, I mean, the good stuff never gets brought up because that's what you're expected to do. So it's just a big, it's just a beating. It's the meeting. It's not a meeting. It's a beating.
Yeah.
And I've been through those. And I learned a lot from that where it's almost like, okay, I wouldn't bring up anything negative unless I had a way to fix it and a positive thing to say. So I would be somewhere in the middle to where it would be like, and I would be very open about the objective. Sometimes you have a boss, anybody that's listening now, you might have a boss that says, do it this way. And you want to know why you're doing it that way, and they won't right. share that. Right. I would always share why we're doing it this way, why you're, because you seem to give some kind of ownership to the people that are working for you where they feel like they kind of own the result. They're not so just doing yeah, something to do it. They get it. They have that ownership, and that helps. And I think it would probably be similar because in radio, there are you are performing, and there are egos. Same thing in sports.
Yeah, I mean, the my way or the highway only works
yeah,
so long,
no, that doesn't
right?
work. That doesn't
yeah,
work.
Yeah.
That doesn't
and
work.
So you want to be respected, not necessarily just feared.
Right.
And
that works with an intern. It doesn't work with highly talented people that have proven themselves.
Right. And then, you know, I don't like the WKRP vibe. I mean,
I wish it was like that in my time. I got into radio a little too late to be the WKRP thing. But I saw a little of that, and that was a lot of fun. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, but it's interesting because, you know, the Alan Williams, the defensive coordinator, talked about he used to be much more hard-nosed. And he evolved. And he became a different type coach, and it seems to work with certainly younger players who maybe haven't been kicked in the butt all the way up to the NFL
level.
Yeah,
we've got that right here.
So
yeah.
I'd hope right now that I'm a little more mature, that I've handled situations, adversity a little bit better. I would think that at this point, I know football of 8 years or whatever that was a little bit better. I handle the staff better in terms of just interpersonal skills, I would hope that. And then the players, I think I was so intense about every situation. Every situation is not live or die. So I think right now I'm a little bit more relaxed. I'm a lot more relaxed. And so they get to know me. They get to know not just Coach Williams. They get to know Alan Williams. And so when the guys get to know you, I think they play for you. Not that the guys didn't before, but now they get to see me as a person, not just as a coach.
No, that's very interesting, Brian. And I would totally agree. For anybody who's been a manager for any length of time in any walk of life, you start out with guns a-blazing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you learn the hard way. And people could tell you, don't go starting out guns a-blazing. No, I know what I'm doing. And then all of a sudden, you're down the road, and it's like, I made a lot of mistakes. Guns were a-blazing. Don't need to do that. Need to be a little more chill and selective and all of these things that Alan Williams was saying. And that makes for an effective coach or boss. Along the
because,
way.
Yeah, because, you know, old school coaches, they didn't change, right? I mean, they didn't evolve. They didn't become more
right.
chill and get to know the person.
And it worked
coach.
In a time, but that's not necessarily the time anymore.
Yeah, and that's a different generation that you're coaching up. And so you better evolve or you're not going to be around this game longer.
312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We're going to go to break here, come back. We've got some audio. That was played. Peggy and Dion talked to Velus Jones Jr. yesterday,
and he had a nice practice yesterday too.
Yes,
and
he did. Yes, he did. We're going to hear. We're going to hear that back, and we're here until 12:30. We'll hear that, then we'll get back to baseball, set up what's happening at Guaranteed Rate today, wrap up the Twitter polls, all of that before we get out of here before pregame at 12:30. On your home for the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
It's Hanley and Xander, and we are going to play for you right now a bit of the interview. Peggy and Dion had new Bears draft pick Velus Jones Jr. on the show yesterday.
third-round draft pick out of Tennessee by way of USC, Valus Jones Jr., joins us now on ESPN 1000. Valus, thank you for joining the show.
How are we doing, my people?
We are good. How are you? How was practice today?
Practice was good. We got after it. I feel like everybody was working hard. Everybody's getting after it. Iron sharpens iron at the end of the day. Today was a great day.
Awesome. Valus, I love how mature you are. This is such a, I know it keeps coming up and you must get so tired of people bringing it up, but I love the fact that you show up every day basically with a briefcase. Like that is how I picture you. Like you come and you're like ready to go to work. You have your briefcase ready. Some guys have showed up at Hallis Hall with a suitcase, but you came with a briefcase because you just have this business-like mentality, right?
Yes, ma'am. That's the truth. That's how I was raised.
Why? Who gave that? Who instilled that in you to have that type of mentality?
Just seeing my grandfather, Charles Jones, and my grandmother, appearance is everything. And, you know, first appearance, you know, you can tell a lot about a person, how they carry themselves, business-like. So, you know, that's how I just carry myself. I'm all about business. But also, you know, it's a time and place. My grandma always used to tell me, it's a time and place for everything. But right now it's business.
Valus, you told a story yesterday about what made that choice, that decision to move closer to home, to be around your grandfather who was going through a lot. So I wanted to ask you, first of all, how he's doing. And second, that said a lot about who you are as a person. What did the opportunity to be close to family to finish your college career, what did that mean to you?
That really meant a lot. But I'll start off by saying my grandfather, he ended up having a stroke. He was around for a while, though. I think like right at a year, passed away 2020 in February. Mm. It was like around in Mardi Gras season back home in Mobile. And so, yeah, that was a tough one. But everything, you know, he taught me, I carry in everyday life and how to be a man and how to be about my business. And so, yeah, that's how I carry myself. And also, you know, it's just a true blessing overall. I'm a big believer in faith, big believer in everything happens for a reason and God timing is perfect. And I feel like there's no better time for me to be here than now. I'm really excited about the season, really excited about this staff, this new staff. And the energy in the building is unbelievable. So I'm just excited for the season.
Valus, when they drafted you, I remember I was thinking, is this guy like the next Devin Hester, or is he the next? There was a running back that I covered with the Bears years ago, Ramont Harris, and Ramont Harris called himself the ultra back because he was so versatile. And I thought, no, this guy is more like a mega player. Like I don't know how to describe you. I know you're a wide receiver, but how do you describe yourself as a football player?
I would say at a young age, I played running back. So even with football, running in my family, with my dad was a great football player in high school, physicality, speed. And so that's always been the mindset of me, never avoid contact, you know, never be afraid to run through anybody. And so that's where I feel like my physicality when it comes to yards after catch, how determined I'd be when it comes to when the ball is in my hands. And so that's that standpoint. And, you know, I was blessed with speed, God-given. Also genetics, my grandmother was fast, Linda Jones. My dad's fast, my uncle, Kyle Towner, he's fast. My cousin, Colin Towner, is fast. Speed runs in the family. So it's like a mix of combinations, I would say, from the Towner side and the Jones side, the bulkiness, the sides and everything. So it's a mixture of combinations. Really blessed.
Was your grandmother a track star?
Yeah, she did. She actually ran.
No doubt.
I think her highest grade level was high school. She had kids and stuff, and times were different back then. She was born in 52, and so times were different back then. So I know, you know, she was always working. A three job working, hard working woman just to provide for her family.
Well, it was also pre-Title IX.
Yeah,
so she, that was before she had any opportunities that a lot of the women have today.
Bayless, you mentioned you mentioned the energy in the building is high, and you're feeling that already. We're not able to get in the locker room yet, but as you guys have kind of integrated together, can you describe or what's shown you that you're all on the same page and you're all kind of moving in the right direction?
It's just the energy. Everybody being so social in the locker room, no matter if you're on defense or offense, like we know we're in all this together. We know what the outside world is talking about, but, you know, we put the blindfolders on, we put the horse blinders on, and, like, we keep pushing. And at the end of the day, we all we got. It doesn't matter what anybody else have to say or think about us. We know the talent we have. We know what we can do. So at the end of the day, it comes down to execution and being sound. So everybody's on the same page. The energy's high. Everybody's flying around having fun. There's great energy in the building. There's no better place to be.
Do you feel like, based on the way the offense is being set up and taught and the talent that's in there, that you guys can surprise a lot of people this year?
Oh, I feel like we're not going to surprise, you know, ourselves, because we already know what we're capable of and what's to come this season. But I'm pretty sure many people will be surprised. For those who doubt,
we saw some of that energy on a Twitter post and on Instagram from a teammate posting fellow rookie Jaquan Brisker, singing in front of the team. I'm sure this is all part of the rookie just getting to know you. So what have you had to do? Have they asked you to do anything yet? Have you had to sing or anything?
It's crazy you ask that, because I'm up today. So wishing luck.
Yeah. Oh, no.
He had the crowd on his side. We're going to see. I was a Jada Youngin fan. He passed away. I was murdered, I think, like 2 days ago. And so I'm going to do a song tribute to him. So big 23.
Wow.
All right. So everybody's singing there. Boy, it's Kumbaya at Bears Camp. Brian Hanley. Well, it's Velus Jones Jr. I've been saying Velus, but it's Velus.
Well, we'll know his name.
We'll know his name, and we'll be saying his name plenty. I think this kid is going to be a star.
Yeah, and you learned a lot there. Nice interview, of course, from Peggy and Deanna, as always. And you catch them on Saturdays here on ESPN 1000. And it's good. It's good to get to know some of these young guys. And obviously, the maturity level belies his age. I mean, you love to see that.
Yeah. It's refreshing. Because a lot of times athletes get kind of knocked for just being, you know, big giant kids with a lot of money. And so it's nice to hear, you know, he seems to be very grounded.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, guys like David Montgomery, who've been here for a couple of years, a very serious sort too. I mean, they don't lack for maturity. Now, they've made some the last few practices. He had a nice practice yesterday, Velus did. But they're still making some of the, jumping the bad penalties and some of the undisciplined play that they were known for. So, as Luke Getsy said, they have a lot to work on. By no means are they anywhere close
full
to being
disclosure,
where they...
and we appreciate that as fans. Yeah. All right, let's hit the break, come back in two, and we've got a round of high-low to do here on ESPN 1000 with Xander and Hanley.